Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 62 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again. Today on the podcast, I will have a special guest. That is retired acting inspector Jeff Kilcullins of the Ottawa Police. And we're going to have a really interesting conversation about guns and his experience in policing and his experience in dealing with licensed gun owners. And then even a little bit of talk about the relationship between citizens and law enforcement. It's a very nuanced, very important relationship. And those conversations are always really interesting. One more thing I want to mention, the theme music, right? Last time around on the podcast, I asked you guys out there for an opinion on whether I should continue with Rush's Big Money as the theme song. And the reason I did that, or the reason why I use it a couple of times, is just because it seems to lend itself perfectly to the way that the podcast starts. And I think it's just a great song as well. But more of you than the other had said, no, keep mixing it up. That's a little bit more fun. So as you probably could have figured out, I had a different song this time, and I will continue to mix it up. But I really appreciate the feedback. And anytime you ever want to give me feedback about anything, you can always reach out to podcast@firearmrights.ca. So try not to say that too fast, because some people say firearmsrights.ca, and of course it doesn't get to us. So firearm singular rights plural .ca. One more thing. As you probably have figured out, we've been on a big push to get everybody on our newsletter to subscribe to our emailing list, and that's really, really important. So I'm going to cover that when I have Tracy Wilson on in a minute to tell us about a couple of things that she's been up to this week. But I just wanted to mention, one of the features of the newsletter right now is staffer Steve asks our subscribers for a question. And you can basically send us a question. You can ask that I answer it or Tracy answers it, and it can be basically anything. So the question, I'm just going to tell you what the question was that we got last week that went out in, I think it went out last Friday in that email. But the question was, do you think that Canadians would be opening to considering or voting to have either concealed carry or open carry licenses? Is that something we would push for a vote on or trying to get? So now, think what you want about the question, whether that's a realistic question or not, or whether it's important. Aside from that, the answer to a question like that is very complex, and it really provides some insight in what we're advocating for and why we do it the way we do it. So I think all I'm trying to say is, if you have a question, make sure you subscribe to the email list. Not only will you have an opportunity each when that email comes every Friday to ask a question, but you're also going to see an answer, a question and an answer from the previous week. And those answers, like for me to answer that question, it was four paragraphs, well, about 3.5 paragraphs. And it actually could have been a little bit longer because that's a big question. And it sort of breeds other questions. So it ends up to be like a little essay. It's probably about 600 words. So anyway, that's another great reason to subscribe to the newsletter. I will repeat it again when I talk to Wilson, but I'm going to tell you, we will not spam you. You're going to get one email a week, and the majority of it is original content. So it's definitely worth doing. It doesn't cost you anything, and it's a way for us to stay in touch with you. So make sure that you do that. All right. Now we're going to switch over to Skype and talk to Wilson. Wilson.
Giltacka.
There you are.
I'm here. Surviving okay. The apocalypse.
Yeah. Just staying quarantined.
I am.
Coming up with our grand plan, take over the world.
World domination.
Yeah, full spectrum domination. Okay, so we got a couple of things to go over fairly quickly as I've got an exciting guest for today. But first thing we want to talk about is our email list and why it's so important to get the heck on that thing immediately.
That's right. So you will notice going forward, starting now, that when you visit firearmrights.ca, you will see an automatic prompt that comes up. It's very simple. First, last name and email. That's all we need. Your information's secure with us. We would never sell it or compromise it in any way, and we're not going to spam you. But here's the deal. It's super important that you take the time to fill that out. I know I'm always bugging you to do stuff, but this is vitally important because it's going to be our little lifeline to keep in contact with each other. We cannot depend on the social media platforms to keep gun owners connected. In fact, I think ultimately the mission is probably to keep us torn apart. So we got to take back control of that. We've got to stay in contact with each other. The email newsletter itself is actually really valuable. It comes out every Friday, so you're not getting tortured with constant emails or, you know, stupid blah-bitty blah. These are really informative emails. They come out only on Fridays, gives you all your social distancing activities for the weekend. You'll get a direct link to the podcast, a direct link to the weekly upload of CCFR's Canada Downrange, which is available now for free on YouTube. And you'll get whatever else, you know, whatever other original content that we've got going on. It's not going to be, you know, a repeat of all the week's news stories from the mainstream media. You've already read that. This is going to be something that you're interested in and something specific to the CCFR. As well, there's a bonus thing going on. Staffer Steve came up with a great idea, and he incorporated a question of the week into the newsletter. So you can fill that in. It's a little, it's right within the newsletter itself. So when you receive it, you can fill that in. You put your name, you put your question, and you can even choose who you want to answer it. So if somebody's got a question for Rod, or someone's got a question for me, or you've just got a question, you don't care who answers it, this is your opportunity to have direct contact with us, where we will sit down and take the time to formulate a full, robust, you know, response to your question. And it'll be published in the following newsletter the next week. So I think it's a great opportunity for members to take their questions and inquiries straight to the leadership team, which is really different. You know, rather than posting in the group where we could miss it or whatever, this gives you a direct link to us. So yeah, make sure you go visit firearmrights.ca, or you can just Google CCFR, get on the website, automatically that little window will pop up. Don't just dismiss it. I really need you to fill that out. We're going to keep in contact. And this way, if Facebook and Twitter and everything else blows up, we're still going to have contact with each other, which is really important.
Yeah, we can't trust the social media platforms. I mean, I think I mentioned something in the last podcast about it. I mean, Facebook has been kind of screwing around with us for probably 2 years, and we haven't had any trouble with Twitter. We haven't really had any trouble with YouTube other than just the inherent problems with YouTube. You know, phony intellectual property claims, stuff like that, copyright claims and stuff like that. But other than that, they've been pretty good. But, you know, we just can't rely on them because you have moves, especially by the liberals, constantly trying to control speech and trying to control what people say to each other in the public square. And I would not be surprised to see our plug get pulled for everything all in one day. I mean, they've done that to other people for less. So yeah, we just can't rely on them, and we need to have a way to get a hold of you. And as Tracy said, and this is really important, you're risking nothing signing up. We will not spam you. And you have that coming from me directly because I can't stand getting spammed by people. So we will not do that to you. Next, we've got a couple of lobbying reports that we logged.
Yeah, so keeping in time with the CCFR's commitment to using technology, I've resorted to Zoom for some lobby activities. So there's been lots going on, actually. Yesterday, I shared a post around by a newly elected MP, Alex Ruff, who represents the riding of Bruce Gray, Owen Sound. He took over for our good friend Larry Miller. So most of you will remember Larry Miller. He was on the Conservative Hunting and Angling Caucus and a staunch supporter of firearms owners and hunters. So he retired last election, and Alex ran in his riding. Alex is a veteran with 25 years service to the Canadian Armed Forces, and he's got this real awesome down-home common sense approach to things. And I just love this guy. He's awesome. So he had presented a question to Minister Blair. Members of Parliament are given the opportunity to directly pose a question to a minister or the ministry in general, and that government official is obligated to provide a response within 45 days. So that's their right as a parliamentarian. And Alex took it upon himself to formulate a question to Minister Blair, asking him what evidence the Liberal government is using to, you know, to prove the efficacy of gun bans on our legally acquired firearms in Canada as proposed within their election mandate. And it's funny because the answer that he received from Minister Blair or Minister Blair's office, you know, was basically just a rundown of what the Liberal platform is, and then saying that they have hosted roundtables and town halls and conducted meetings with stakeholders. And this is what they've decided to do. So I actually went through that stakeholder survey that was published by Public Safety last year. And I brought a couple points forward to Alex. And I'm not going to go through the whole list here because I've got a whole page of stuff we talked about. But a couple of the highlights are this. So 81% of respondents said no when asked, should more be done to limit access to handguns? So 81%. 77% said no when asked, should more be done to limit access to, finger quotes, assault weapons? And 76% of respondents said we should be focusing on illicit firearms versus legal firearms. And 86% of those said we should be focusing on the smuggling of those illicit firearms. So I don't know. I'm looking at the Liberal platform and I'm looking at the key suggestions and key findings from the stakeholders, and I see no correlation. And it's interesting because you tweeted out and you said, this isn't a non-answer, Alex. This is actually the answer. It's a political answer, right? There's no evidence that this would these measures would have any effect on public safety or stop gang shootings in Toronto. But this is this policy was crafted for political purposes, simply. So,
yeah, it's a political action. Yeah, not a public safety action. And they answered truthfully, probably the first real answer, truthful answer that the Liberals have generated in a while.
Yeah,
but so, yeah, that is their answer. It's political because we promised our supporters that we would do this. That's there is no evidence. This is why we did it. And they answered.
So, yeah, absolutely. So Alex will be preparing. Yeah, well, it is what it is. So Alex will be preparing a follow-up question for Minister Blair. And I, when we got off the Zoom, I, of course, forwarded him all the research that I had done throughout, you know, digging through that study and getting all these points for him. There's a huge list I'm not going to bore you with. But anyways, I did forward that over to MP Ruff today. So watch for that in the, you know, the coming days and weeks. We're going to see if he can come up with a really twisty response to Minister Blair. And yeah, I don't mind. I am fully willing to help any MP that is going to, you know, kind of throw a wrench into the gears of this government's awful plan to abuse firearms owners. So,
yeah. Well, that's all they know how to do to make people think that they're interested in public safety. And that's a little bit hyperbolic, but I don't see how it's inaccurate.
No.
We also had another chat with one of the leadership candidates. We'll keep that confidential who that was, but we had a nice Zoom meeting with them.
That's right. So it was fun having you join me for a Zoom with one of the front running leadership candidates. And we talked about policy. We talked about, you know, basically our little wish list. We talked about what the road ahead looks like for the candidates, considering, you know, these unprecedented times that we're in. And, you know, these poor people, they've been working their hinds off trying to get their campaigns up and running. And then, of course, they've been stopped by the virus. So, yeah, that was a really great conversation. We look forward to working with them more. And that's the CCFR is always willing and ready to offer themselves up as a resource to anybody that's going to act in the best interest of Canadian gun owners.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the report cards and interviews, and we will do all those things that we did last time around, but we have to do those things when they're relevant, not now. So,
well, no, it's way too early for that. The race is literally legally on hold. So You know, it isn't a campaign right now. So I'd rather wait, use this time in the interim to help them work on policy. I know in the last leadership race, there was a zillion candidates and a lot of them threw together these wild and crazy policies. And it's like, honestly, I would rather take this time to work with the candidates, get really great, effective, you know, attractive policies that's not only palatable to the rest of Canada, but helpful to gun owners. And then, you know, and then we've got a real race, right? So that's what I'm focusing on right now, rather than doing report cards on policies that, you know, may not be great. So.
Well, and they might change too, because, you know, the world is changing and it's never going to be the same. Like, I think most people would probably agree with that. Mm-hmm. Now how much different it's going to be. Well, we'll know that in 2 to 3 months, but, whatever the new normal is, I think people's ideas, around firearms are changing, at least if they're people that are somewhat insightful, that should be changing. You know, a lot of people are finding the value in owning a firearm for a variety of different reasons. And you never know, the conversation could change, thus the policies could change. So it's probably best anyway to get all that stuff done fresh while it's a little bit closer to the leadership election itself. So yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah.
Awesome. Keep it busy. Well, thank you for what you did this week. And I've got a really exciting guest coming up, so I'm gonna hang it up for now and we will talk to you next week.
Awesome. Take care, stay safe, and wash your hands.
Hey everybody, this is Rod from the CCFR. In 4.5 years, we've created the most sophisticated and influential firearm rights organization in Canadian history. And when I say we, I mean our team and all of you who have trusted and supported us financially and as volunteers. Together, we've produced television shows, made our presence very well known on Parliament Hill, and taken on the anti-gun establishment as never before. We are in unprecedented times in Canada and around the world. Our goal is to continue to develop the CCFR into an even more formidable organization to better fight for your right to own and use firearms when stability returns. If you can afford it, please continue to support the CCFR by keeping your membership current and/or donating. If you are unemployed, do not do these things. We are an organization with values, and family comes first. If you're in this situation and you still want to support the CCFR, do it by sharing our explainer videos, the podcast, our reports, or our TV show, which is now available for free online on the CCFR YouTube channel. We can come out of this stronger than ever. Look after yourself, your family, and your community. And thank you for supporting the CCFR in any way that works for you. All right, on the Skype, I've got Jeff Kilcollins, formerly of the Ottawa City Police Service, I believe. Sure. You can correct me on that, Jeff?
Yeah, that's correct.
And maybe just to get things started, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
I was 31 years with the Ottawa Police, retired 2 years ago. The majority of my career I spent with our tactical unit, 20 out of my 31 years as a full-time tactical officer, as a constable, operator, unit master sniper. I became a squad sergeant and then the unit training sergeant, ultimately becoming the staff sergeant in charge and the unit commander. I did stints in other sections. I did a few years in traffic, a few years in criminal investigations, and then patrol.
Awesome. So your rank when you retired?
I was actually an acting inspector when I retired. The last 3.5 years, I was an acting inspector. And my last position, I was actually what we call a duty inspector or a critical incident commander. So basically in charge of major crime scenes, barricaded calls, hostage takings, tactical unit, drug warrants for our investigators and things like that.
Okay, awesome. So, and the reason why I asked you that specifically is I wanted our listeners to know that, you know, you've been around. You weren't on general duty your entire career. You've been in a lot of different areas and you understand the machine of policing.
Right.
Awesome. So I guess, you know, I've got a series of questions and I think they're questions that I think most people would just want to know as PAL holders and I guess as citizens, because the relationship between citizens and police is extremely important. I don't think enough people understand how important that is, because one derives its authority from the other, and then the other derives its authority from the other. It's a very complex and important experience. But what has been your experience overall? I know there's outlier events, there's exceptions to the rule, but overall interacting with people that have PALs?
I have to think back to the very early years of my career on patrol, and can probably count on two hands the number of interactions that I've had with PAL or RPAL holders, practically none of which were negative. Everyone wants to keep their PAL. Everyone that we've ever interacted with, or myself personally, wants to keep their PAL. They want to abide by the law. They're safe. The majority of the calls generated are reactive, not proactive. We just simply don't find people walking down the street with a firearm. You know, we get calls. Ottawa has a big rural area here. And we would get calls, shots fired in a certain area, but generally along the Ottawa River in a rural area where there's actually an open hunting season. And I can only think of two occasions when I've ever interacted with individuals that were actively hunting and asked them to produce their PALs because they were in possession of firearms. Never a negative comment, never a negative interaction, law-abiding. And your opening comments about, you know, the relationship between the police and the public go clear back to kind of the founding father of law enforcement in England, Sir Robert Peel, who said the people are the police and the police are the people. And that's very true today, hence the number of community policing units that major police departments have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, you know, before we started recording, you know, I talked about a police officer who was an RCMP officer. This is back in the early 80s when I was a kid. That was a very important, a very influential relationship for me as I was a kid getting into trouble and heading down a bad path, because I came from, you know, a bad broken home, bad background, stuff like that. Lived in a bad area. And that role model was something that actually I think really helped me in my life. And things have changed a lot since then. So anyway, maybe I'm unique in that I see the value of the role of the community police officer, and that model actually works in law enforcement. The authoritarian, you know, everything's a nail and I'm a hammer, you know, approach, I don't think is going to work very well, and certainly doesn't work long term. As someone that's had to enforce the law, and someone that knows about the law, you're well aware that between the Criminal Code, the Firearms Act, and the Firearm Act regulations, there is a huge volume of tedious, highly serious criminal offense, you know, carrying regulations out there. Just an incredible amount of them. What do you think about the volume of regulation? So I know this is a long kind of question set up, but I was talking to a police officer in one of my classes, and their position on all of these crazy regulations like magazine size restrictions and transport regulations and all just the myriad of regulations is that when the police go to, try to take down a criminal, they'll have more charges at their disposal to press against them. Like, what do you think of that? Do you think there's too many regulations or not enough?
Well, I wish I could say that I've seen the evidence that the volume of regulations fixes or solves violent crime with firearms. I mean, I don't see anything to that effect. I have no issues with the training and the background checks. I think they're quite valuable, making sure that the right people do the right training and have a background where they can have a firearm and use them responsibly. But we all know criminals simply don't follow these regulations. They don't follow procedures. You know, for example, stolen vehicles for robberies. There are more than one charge. There's more than one charge that can be laid there. The same with firearms. There are multiple sections you can lay, but Crown prosecutors and judges try to make deals, and that's the reason that they overcharge, hoping they can corner the defense into pleading to something. Mm-hmm. And if you went and sought an opinion amongst three different officers even within the same department or across three different departments on a specific regulation or a specific section of any one of those acts, you may get three different answers. And that just lends to the ambiguity between some of the regulations and some of the sections within them. Like, I can give you a prime example. I've asked friends who are still working, not retired yet, about traveling or transporting restricted firearms. And I get answers, well, of course, they can stop as long as it's a direct route to the range or back to their home. They can make a stop for food. I've had others said, absolutely not. They can go straight to the range and straight home. And I refer them to a safely storing and transporting firearms handout given by the RCMP that actually says people can stop. And it tells you how to store it if you stop on your way home. So who's right and who's wrong?
Yeah, the amount of education within law enforcement on the Firearms Act, and probably because of the ambiguity, right? The level of education is terrible. In fact, we have one of our members got into, a disagreement on the roadside about how he was transporting ammunition, and it resulted in him suing the Vancouver City Police, and he won. And before, because he didn't want to sue them, but he tried to make a deal with them. If you give that RCMP handout or provide further training to your officers in the enforcement of the Firearms Act and its regulations, we won't go any further. And they refused, and they went all the way through court process and lost. And then I don't know.
Wow.
Just the resistance is really interesting. But I think I would agree with you. Lots of different officers will have a different opinion on the volume of regulations. So, I mean, just as an example, do you think that magazine size restrictions have a net benefit to public safety?
Well, again, we don't have the evidence of active shooters in this country to prove that limiting magazine capacities have done anything for public safety. If you can only take those firearms to the range, the restricted firearms, and use them on the range, nobody wants to risk losing that RPAL. What difference does it make if you fire a 10-round magazine, a 10 or a 20-round magazine on the range under the safe conditions and guidelines of that range as we were all taught?
Yeah.
I just don't see what it solves.
Well, it's a feel-good measure, as most of the regulations
which
are.
Which many of them are, correct.
Yeah, and it's not about feelings. It's actually about facts. But now, during the hearings for Bill C-71, there was a lot of talk, and one of the by Bill Blair and then Public Safety Minister Ralph Goodale about stolen firearms. So as somebody that's, had to do a 10 scenes and interact with people and all the rest of that stuff in your career in law enforcement, like, what are your opinions of maybe a PAL holder that's had their firearms legitimately stolen and then those firearms, sold or used in crimes? Should that firearm owner be punished? Like, is that the answer, to punish or further regulate firearm owners? And you can be honest, I don't mind hearing the bad, right?
I'll give you the answer I get. That I give all the time when asked by friends who don't own firearms, by friends that I coach and teach at my gun club, the criminal is always the person at fault. And again, I'll go back to the stolen vehicle auto theft example. We don't charge registered owners when the vehicle gets charged. We don't charge them for leaving their car unlocked. And yes, there is a greater responsibility with firearms. I absolutely understand that. Ownership brings responsibility. And there are things that as owners, firearm owners, we shouldn't be doing. And that's broadcasting what we own and how many we have and where and how they're stored. But we don't turn the victim into the criminal, or we're not supposed to, at least. And your firearms are securely stored, locked up as per regulations. Why would any law enforcement officer think or even begin to suspect a charge in that case when that person is purely the victim? You can imagine the outrage if this went the way of sexual assaults and rapes, and they tried to put a reverse onus on the victim. People would be outraged.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, but it didn't seem to stop the public safety minister then and now from creating a reverse onus. I mean, I sat there with Bill Blair right in front of him. On
yes,
did you see that interview?
Yes.
What a mess! What a total disaster! Anyway,
I've never seen someone in such a high position look so puzzled.
Yeah, I think he looks like that quite often. Yeah, he's the wrong person for that job. He's the wrong person for a lot of jobs, and
he knows the facts. That's what's disgusting about the whole thing is he knows the facts. He knows that all of these gun club members, competitive shooters, we are not the problem. He knows that. But as a friend of mine very high up in the government said, if he wants to keep that portfolio, he'll take his marching orders and push through.
Yep. Yeah. Well, he has to know. I refuse to believe that he doesn't know. And
he does.
If that's true, the thing is, Jeff, if that's true, then he's intentionally misleading Canadians. And that's like, it's funny because all these people, they do that for political reasons and they don't understand that that's a temporary way to do things, because at some point the government loses all of its credibility, if it hasn't lost it already, at least with anyone that can read and takes a few minutes, to understand things. A government with no credibility is just as bad as a police service with no credibility. It's really bad, because then you have noncompliance, and noncompliance is bad. That's the breakdown of order, law and order, right?
And I think we've seen that. Statistics have shown repeatedly that some of the things they've recited, including some of the anti-gun groups out there, are factually incorrect.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really it's a weird way to make a living, I'll tell you. Just having to
BB guns as a classified firearm. We know that's not the case.
Starter pistols. Yeah.
Starter pistols, yeah.
Nail guns. I've got two more questions for you before we end the interview. Number one, have you been involved in a case of straw purchasing during your career?
No, not myself.
Really?
No, I have not.
Oh, no. Wow.
I've been involved, not on the investigative side. I've been involved in the, politely put, the door kick, where we've executed warrants for investigative sections, but myself never on the investigative side. Don't forget, 20 out of my 31 years, I was a tactical officer. So we don't actually carry the investigations.
Okay. Well, have you heard of one in Ottawa?
Oh yeah. Well, I'd have to think back. Not that comes to mind immediately. I mean, I know there are cases investigated in Ottawa for it.
Okay. But I mean, to be fair, it's because there has, I'm just trying to be fair. One or two or even a few cases in the last 30 years, but it's not anywhere near as big a problem as, everybody gets, sat down by the chief and it's like, listen, we got to stop this straw purchasing by licensed gun owners. It's not at that point. No.
Well, I've never heard. And my last 3.5 years as an acting inspector, I sat on a couple of committees by virtue of my position, which were the senior officers, a senior executive committee. And then another one was senior officers. And I've never heard that come out of the chief's mouth. I've never heard discussions around that ever brought to that table.
Interesting. Okay.
Which makes you wonder just how bad is it?
Well, yeah, I mean, we have a report coming out on straw purchasing, but and the studies, well, I shouldn't say studies, it's not really studies, but the reports that we put out, I want them to be absolutely as accurate as anyone can make them. And that's in sharp contrast to what the anti-gun people do. They make things as misleading as fallacious as
yes
as they can, right? And so I don't want to That's not our model. Our model is total truth and facts evidence. As we can find them. Yeah. And
evidence-based decision-making. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Well, actually it's policy-based decision-making is what they do. But,
I call theirs policy by panic.
Yeah, that's true. Policy by politics. But, and then the other thing is in your knowledge or your, sorry, in your experience, do Canadian police use distraction devices?
Yes. Absolutely.
Because okay. I was on the agenda and you know, TVO's thing there.
Yes. Yeah.
And Steve I had this Pagan. Steve Pagan. And this animal yeah. activist was like, I was a lawyer and it's ridiculous. You know, the idea that, you know, distraction devices are not used in Canada. I'm like, I've seen them used in training, for God's sakes. Why are you yes. telling me that they're not used? Yeah. So anyway,
they are. Yeah. Our policy for a long time was they would never be used on an interior, except under very, very rare circumstances. And for, you know, tactical security reasons, I won't say what those are, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but very specific circumstances. But they were used. That means they could be used on an exterior near a window. But yeah, absolutely. They're used. I mean, they're non fragmenting distraction devices.
Yeah, well, they're still dangerous. I mean, I had I had a correction officer actually have their leg blown up from a distraction device. But anyways, it wasn't my course. It wasn't my interest. So anyway,
I've been on probably hundreds of calls where they've been used, or operations, not calls, operations where we're executing warrants or doing takedowns or.
Well, I've got one more question because I'm actually alluding to, I don't know if you ever saw this video that I did, and the doctors were, you know, the spin doctors for protection from guns were absolutely, you know, they were flabbergasted at my suggestion that a distraction device might be used on a gun owner should there be a sweeping ban and, you know, 500,000 Canadians become in unauthorized possession of prohibited firearms. And God forbid, 5% of those people would be like, well, you know what? I'll just wait till the next election. Not really understanding the consequences that they could, you know, they could be arrested and sent to prison for a mandatory minimum of 3 years for unauthorized possession of prohibited firearm. Right. I made this video trying to explain to them, like, you live in a world of virtue signaling. You know, I live in a world of reality, and the world of reality, people can be charged with that criminal offense. And actually the Crown doesn't have a whole lot of choice. They have to, you will get the mandatory minimum unless you can launch a constitutional challenge against mandatory minimums, you know? And so these people, they don't understand anything, but yet they'll be crying about all kinds of things. So the distraction device, the idea that a flashbang would be rolled in somewhere, if the circumstances called for that, was there like, oh my God, this is the most hyperbolic, fear-mongering thing that we've ever heard. So I think we've established that distraction devices can be used in Canada and are used in some circumstances.
Yes.
Now, the other thing is if it was known that I was in possession of prohibited firearms, I was contacted by the police, and I mean me as an individual, Jeff. Like, whatever you, I don't know how much you know about me, but me as an individual. And I said, no, I'm not giving up my guns. And I've got them here and you're not getting them. And mm-hmm. there was a decision made by brass. You know what? We can't allow this to happen because that's showing that noncompliance is an option for people. And there was a decision made to come and get my guns. Would a department, do you think, just in your opinion, would they send a general duty member to knock on my door, or would they send ERT because it's a gun call?
Yeah, I can tell you what would happen in Ottawa. It's highly, highly unlikely that a patrol officer would be sent to that by themselves. A tactical estimate would be done, or a risk analysis,
yeah,
and that would point to a tactical unit. In this area.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Why would you send a general duty member to somebody that says, like, I have a prohibited firearm, I'm not giving it up under any circumstances?
No. And that wouldn't be a dynamic entry search warrant execution, or at least, and I'll just give you another little part of my background. I still teach And one of the courses that I teach, probably my most popular, is tactical planning, operational planning, of which the biggest part of that is how to do a proper risk analysis and risk estimate. And I would never authorize my own unit to do a dynamic entry search warrant when we're going for firearms. Why would you put yourself in such a risky position? It's not disposable evidence like narcotics. You're not going to flush, you know, the parts of a machine gun. You're not going to flush the bolts and the breech. It just doesn't happen.
Okay, well, that's fair. That's fair. Now, any number of things could trigger an entry depending on my reaction to.
That's right.
You know, that's that suggestion right. is, yeah. So in that case,
it doesn't mean it couldn't go. That doesn't mean it couldn't go to having to do a dynamic entry. Circumstances are very fluid, and given the tempo of the call, things could change very quickly where a unit has to do an entry.
Right. So in that context, my example, I don't know if you ever saw that video. Well, I was trying to paint a picture about what's at risk. I'll send you a link to it. You can check it out.
Okay, yeah, great.
So, you know, based on our conversation, I would say it was a little bit provocative because I'll admit if I'm wrong, no problem. Right. So it was a little bit provocative. You can be the judge. But not too out of the realm of reality that someone could find themselves, you know, with a Bearcat parked on their front lawn, you know, saying, hey, you know what, you were told to get rid of this firearm, you know, and you have to give that firearm up.
A call like that where we're going to seize them, and we know that you can be guaranteed that the armored vehicle would be coming out for something like that as well. I mean, Saskatoon has the best evidence of that, where they rolled theirs out and the Bearcat actually took rounds. It took a number of hits.
Yeah. So in that context, why would you ever send a general duty member to a call like that anyway?
Well, with any common sense or background would ever do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, let's, I think we've been at it for about 22 minutes and, would you be willing to do another interview? Cause I still had some questions, that I think people would be interested in hearing the answers to. Would you be interested in coming back?
Sure. Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thanks very much, Jeff, for your time. And, it was really informative.
Yeah. Thanks for the invitation.
All right, everybody, that is going to do it for episode 62 of the CTFR Radio Podcast. I really appreciate you guys coming back and listening to the podcast on a regular basis. I'm trying to make them a little bit shorter, a little bit more action-packed, but then a little bit more frequent. So don't forget to share this podcast. We're trying to grow our audience, you know, even casual firearm owners, you know, your buddies or whatever, if they're hunters or just have a gun, they don't hunt or don't sport shoot or what have you. They need to know what's going on because we need to grow our ranks. The liberals can pull anything they want anytime. They could do an OIC, you know, tomorrow morning if they wanted to. And there's only really a couple of ways that we can get that information to you. The media is not going to help us, and social media platforms have not been helpful either. So, and they could pull our plug anytime. So spread the podcast and make sure you get on our email newsletter list. Also check your spam folder. When I subscribed myself, and even my address is a firearmrights.ca address, the CCFR newsletter went into spam. First, I found it in the other folder. If you use Outlook Online, you'll know what that is. And then it was even in the junk mail folder once, even after I a couple of times put it into the inbox. So I'm not saying that Microsoft is trying to screw us over somehow, but I don't know. It's pretty weird. I get other people's emails, spam emails, no problem. Anyway, I also want to thank Jeff Kilcollins from the Ottawa Police for coming on and having a really candid discussion. I really appreciate that. Not all law enforcement want to have a candid, honest discussion like that for a variety of reasons, not bad reasons, but just for a variety of reasons. So I really appreciate Jeff's candor and for coming on and, just helping understand the relationship between law enforcement and civilians a little bit better. Don't miss an episode of the podcast because every week I've got a new guest coming on, and I've got guests lined up for the next 2 months almost. So next week I've got Noah Schwartz coming on. He's a PhD candidate from Carleton University, and he's written a couple of firearm-related
articles recently, and he's got some interesting stuff to talk about. So I'm having him come on the next podcast. As I said, make sure you share the podcast if you're in a position to do so. Become a member of the CCFR if you can, or donate. If you can't, that's okay. Just help be a social media warrior on behalf of gun owners and spread the links and engage in polite civil conversation. Stay safe, everybody, and we will see you next week.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.